Introduction. Hey, congratulations on getting your hands on this tournament tactics report. What you're about to discover are the hidden strategies and principles behind successful tournament play. I'm only going to cover the important Provol techniques. I'm not going to teach you what a tournament is, or how it's played, or give you any common sense fluff. I could write thousands of pages about tournaments, so consider this report a small snapshot of some of my ideas and tips. If you have any feedback or questions for me regarding tournament tactics, please email me at roy@royrounder.com. All right, let's get started. Roy Rounder Sit and Goes. Let's start with perhaps one of the hottest trends in poker, sit and goes. I sincerely believe that sit and goes are revolutionizing the way poker is played. Literally, you can play dozens of tournaments per day, every day, from the comfort of your own home, whenever you want. Mastering these games and developing a system for consistently winning is like writing your own paycheck. Seriously. Patience and hand selection is everything. The number one reason you'll lose a sit and go is because you played too many starting hands. The players in sit and goes are loose. There are many reasons for this, but we won't cover them here. The thing to remember is this. If you play a lot of hands against loose players, you will catch bad beats. The answer then is to not play a lot of hands and only play monsters. The playing style to adopt is what I call tight aggressive squared. Tight aggressive squared means to play extremely tight with your hand selection and extremely aggressively when you have a good hand. The great thing about sit and goes is that you will almost get action with your monster hands. I've created this killer chart as a guide for you to follow. Print this out. There will be exceptions in each phase, of course, but for the most part, this holds true. Follow this and you'll start placing in the money in more sit and goes starting immediately. This is for 10-player sit and goes. It is basically the same for 8-player tables. Hash of players left your game strategy when you have a monster hand, AA, KK, QQ, go Allen and play super aggressively. Your goal should be to 10, 8 players narrow the field to one caller and double up. If you have big slick, play it based on positioning, but still play it aggressively. The only other hands you should play are pocket pairs and suited connectors and ace-x suited, and you should limp in only with these hands. Your goal is to have a hidden hand that catches trips, a straight, or a flush that busts your opponents. Don't play any other starting hands. Be disciplined and patient. The fish will kill each other off at this level. Maintain your previous game strategy. Only play premium hands. As the blinds go up, don't bother playing suited connectors or low pocket pairs unless 7-5 players you have a comfortable chip lead. Every action should either be raise or fold, never call. This is the phase right before payouts begin. Here, players at the table get tighter in hopes of finishing in the money. When you have good positioning and sense weakness, you can use your tight table image to steal the blinds, which will be reasonably high at this point. 5-4 players lean on short-stacked players when they're in the blinds by doubling their blinds. If you're the chip leader, don't let other players see a cheap flop. But don't waste chips, be smart and play your positioning. Now that you've placed in the money, be aggressive. Your goal is first place, not second. Be very aggressive and steal the blinds from your opponent's 3 players with good positioning. Don't be afraid of risking all your chips. If you play it right, you'll either place in third or in first, rarely in second. Hopefully you're the chip leader at the table. If so, lean on your opponent by doubling the blinds every hand or by putting him all in if he's very short stacked. If 2 players you're the short stack, push all in with pocket pairs, painted hands, and ace-x suited. If the blinds are so high that you must make a move quickly, do it with connectors or any hand with an ace. Go for the money. Your entire mentality in a sit and go should be to go for the money. If you begin thinking of sit and goes like a business, with profits and losses, it will make a lot of sense. This will help you become more patient. In normal poker, being a 60-40 favorite or a 70-30 favorite with all your money in the middle is good. This is not the case with sit and goes, or at least not at the beginning of a sit and go. The reason is because you'll often get knocked out and the tournament will be useless. The key is to be an overwhelming favorite for your all-in hands, and you can do that by only playing monsters. Tight aggressive squared is the name of the game. This is also the reason why you should place third or first, but not second. At first glance, this may seem strange, so let me explain. When you make it in the money in the top three, you've accomplished your main goal. Now your goal should be first place. The reason is because it pays considerably more than second or third. The difference between second and third is relatively small. That means when there are three players at the table, you should be pushing the action. Don't try to just sit back and wait for one of them to go out, unless there's a complete manic at the table. Instead, be aggressive and push your stack all in with good hands. Doing this will win you the blinds, which will build your chip stack very quickly. If you run into a great hand and lose, that's okay. By consistently following this approach, you'll place in first much more often and win more money in the long run. Don't bluff. When you're at low stakes sit and goes online, bluffing isn't an option until you get down to just a few players, five or less in a 10-man game. The reason is because there is such a huge percentage of dumb online poker players who will call all the way down to the river with nothing but an ace high or bottom pair. Bluffing is a bad idea because it usually never works. This principle of not bluffing bad players is actually true for all types of no-limit hold'em poker. Calculate your profits per hour and aim for higher stakes. One of the biggest mistakes I see with sit and goes is players who enter the wrong stakes games. The way to know the right stakes is to simply figure out what makes you the most money per hour. Period. For instance, let's say you can play 3 sit and go s per hour. Let's say you place in the money for a half of the $5 sit and goes you play and average $16 in winnings for each time you place. Now let's say you can win 1/3 of the $10 sit and goes you play in and average $35 in winnings for each time you place. Which level should you choose? With the $5 sit and goes, you're spending $10. Let's ignore entry fees to make $16. So you make $6 for every 2 games, which is $3 for every game. That's $9 per hour. For the $10 games, you're spending $30 to bring in $35. So that's $5 profit for every 3 games, which equals $1.67 per hour. This is a huge difference. I've given you the lowest stakes games as examples here, and I hope you see my point. This type of discrepancy widens when you start playing in higher stakes games. My rule is this: start at the lowest level and work your way up. Build a bankroll at the $5 games and then move to the $10 ones. Build your bankroll there and move to $20, and so on and so on. Follow this approach, and you'll soon be making serious money per hour playing online poker. The other thing to remember is that if you beat a lower stakes level, move up, then get your ass kicked and lose your money, don't despair, but don't deposit more money. It just means you're not ready yet, and the answer is to go back down to the previous level and build your bankroll again. The worst thing you can do is get stuck at a level and keep depositing all your money in hopes of beating it. This is irresponsible gambling. Build a bankroll, risk it, and then if you lose, go back and build. Don't try to justify depositing large chunks of money into your online poker account because of the bonuses. Be smart and responsible, and as a result, your poker career will be much more profitable and rewarding. I can promise you that. Use proper etiquette. My last tip for you here with sit and go s is to not be a jackass. Seriously, I see so many guys who act retarded with the chat features on sit and goes and basically shoot themselves in the foot. The reason being a jerk is not smart is because everyone sees it, and people will start gunning for you just to shut you up. Even if you pick on just one player with your trash talk, it annoys everyone. What happens is that as soon as you enter a big hand, other players will enter the hand too, just to get a chance at beating you. The reason it doesn't work to your advantage is because often there will be so many callers that your odds of winning the hand decrease dramatically. Being rude and stupid with the chat features will lead you to fewer winnings and contributes to making poker less enjoyable. Don't do it. Home games, okay, let's talk about home game tournaments. Specifically, I want to talk about the local games you play on a regular basis with the same people over and over. I get emails all the time saying, "Hey, I just can't seem to beat this one person and it's driving me crazy. What's going on?" The answer is that this is very common. And the reason is because most players don't keep improving their game, they fall into the same basic style all the time. And while this style may work for certain games, it won't work for them all. And that's why some of your opponents might be consistently beating you at the local games. So how do you stop this? Here's the answer. Mix up the way you play. By seeing you a lot, your opponents will develop an unconscious understanding of your style of play. Don't think it's true? Just ask yourself, was there ever a new guy who came to your local game and immediately did well? And then maybe he placed again the next week, but after that, didn't have the same great performance consistently. I've seen this happen a lot. And the reason is because no one has a read on the new guy. People call it beginner's luck sometimes, but the truth is the new player is unpredictable. Your goal in home games should be exactly that, to become unpredictable. That's really the secret. Mix up your play from loose to tight, from passive to aggressive, from hand to hand, from game to game, and from month to month. Be the crazy player who no one can quite figure out. When you make a big bet, you want your opponent to immediately say, "Damn, I can never get a read on you." So mix up your playing style. Of course, there's also the flip side, which is, look for patterns in your opponents. Most of your opponents won't be mixing up their style of play. This is the weakness you want to leverage and turn into your advantage. There are three main patterns that I look for in home games. 1 betting patterns, 2 position play patterns, 3 starting hand patterns. Let's talk about the first one, betting patterns. This is a key strategy for all of No Limit Poker, not just in home games. But with home games, the chances are you're up against amateurs, and that's when betting patterns are the most noticeable. The most important betting behavior to watch for is before the flop, after the flop, and the relationship between pre-flop and post-flop bets. For instance, a lot of players will demonstrate the same exact betting behavior when they have aces, kings, or big slick, and the same behavior when they have middle pairs, and the same behavior for suited connectors, and so on. As soon as someone shows their cards at the end of the hand, take note. Think about what they did pre-flop and post-flop and remember it for later. The next pattern is position plays. You see, a lot of beginner card players may understand the concept of positioning and why it's good to be on the button. Well, what you'll discover is that many of these amateurs will do the same exact thing at different positions at the table. For instance, you'll find players who double the big blind every time they're on the button. Why? Not because they have a good hand, but because they think they're being smart about positioning. Take advantage of this. Others will always limp in the small blind no matter what, refusing to fold it. Others will always double the big blind when they're in it, and so on. The key is to look for patterns. Since you'll be playing with many of these opponents repeatedly, your observations will quickly turn into an asset that you can use over and over again. The final pattern to pay attention to is starting hand patterns. Once again, many players are just plain stubborn when it comes to starting hands. Some will only play the same handful of starting hands all night, others will play just about anything if they can limp in, and so on. Many rookies play suited connectors far too aggressively. Same with big slick. When you find a player like this, you'll have priceless information when you're heads up in a big hand with them. Okay, so that covers patterns. Of course, if patterns are so important, why doesn't everyone pay attention to them? Part of the answer is because most people are just too lazy or can't think that much, which brings me to my next point, concentrate. Concentration in home games is easier to lose than money. The reason is because you're relaxed, maybe having a few beers and hanging with your friends, but if you want to win, you must concentrate. That doesn't mean you can't have a good time, but just be smart about it. Go into the game with some focus and clarity, think about your game plan and be calm. Try this out. For your next home game, make it a point to really, really concentrate intensely for the night. Take note of all the patterns, calculate your pot odds in the hands, and just focus as much as possible. Then see what happens. Chances are you will win the game and have more fun than ever, because let's face it, winning is fun. Okay, let's change gears and go back to online poker and talk about free-roll tournaments. LLS free-roll tournaments are quite popular at online poker websites. They boast the incredible promise of something for nothing. Instead of giving you strategies for winning a free-roll, however, I'm going to give you four reasons to not play in free rolls. My goal is to convince you not to waste your time with them. Reason 1. Free rolls have poor payouts. If you look at the exact dollar amount, the payouts for some free rolls may be decent. But the proper metric to pay attention to is the payouts relative to the number of players. And almost all online free rolls have poor payouts. Why wouldn't they? The online casino is giving out money. They're not getting money in return. Their goal is to simply get you amped up about online poker at their website. Reason 2, it's not worth your time. Even if you place and win some money in a free roll, it's rarely worth the time. You can play in extremely low buy-in tournaments and often win way more money. As a serious card player, you've got to understand how precious your time is. Every minute you play the wrong game at the wrong stakes, you're just throwing away money. Reason 3, free rolls are largely based on luck. Since there's no money on the line, people don't care about how they do in a free roll. They simply go all in all the time in hopes of getting lucky and improving their chip stack. Since it's largely based on luck, you'll win even fewer free rolls than if you were playing in real poker tournaments. Reason 4, it's not real poker. A lot of players claim that free rolls are their way to practice their skills. There's literally no worse place to practice. Since there's no money at risk and the players are terrible, free rolls will hurt your skills. You'll start adopting strategies and techniques that might work on free rolls that won't work any place where there's real money on the line. Think of it this way. The New England Patriots didn't become two-time Super Bowl champions by scrimmaging against high school junior varsity flag football teams. So you shouldn't scrimmage on free rolls. Go play with real money, even if it's just a few dollars. Okay, so we've talked about sit and goes, home games, and free rolls. The rest of this report will be about multi-table tournaments, both offline and online, and the different tactics you can use to win the big money. MULTI table tournaments, a great way to think about large multi-table tournaments is in three main stages: early, middle, and late. Let me give you a basic game plan strategy for each stage. Early stage strategies. Think about war scenes from popular movies like Braveheart or The Last Samurai. I'm talking about the war scenes where there's two big armies going into battle, one army on each side. What basically happens in these scenes is this. One side shoots guns or arrows or whatever at the other side, and then all the front men on the other side start dropping like flies. A large majority of them die right away. And then both sides charge, and the remaining front men usually die, while all the guys in the back survive for a long time. Every time I've watched one of these movie scenes, I've thought, wow, the guys up front are really getting screwed here. Well, ironically, it's the same exact way in poker tournaments, except you actually get to choose if you're a front man. Or you can also choose to be a general who stands in the back and survives. Obviously, you want to be a general. Remember this metaphor for the next big poker tournament you enter. For tournaments, the key is survival. And early on, you don't want to be charging out aggressively or making preflop raises with hands like KJ suited. Your job is to sit back and play tight. Fold mostly. Your style of play should be similar to the early stages of a sit and go, tight aggressive squared. Only play premium hands, but when you do catch a monster, you should charge. Don't be afraid to push your chip stack into the middle. Most tournaments feature a lot of loose players, and if you can get all in action when you've got pocket rockets or kings, you're in good shape. The early stages of a tournament are actually the longest. This includes all the time when blinds really don't mean much. Many of your opponents will get overly excited and play the front lines and kill themselves off. You don't have to do anything. Just stand in the back and watch. Remember, survival is the name of the game. Middle stage strategies. Okay, so now the manics have killed each other off and it's time to play some cards. You can loosen up now. If you've got a good size stack, you don't need to loosen up too much, since survival is still the key. But if you're not ahead on chips, it's time to get some action. Play your big hands aggressively as always, since those will be what double you up or get you the blinds. You may or may not be able to bluff at this stage, depending on what the blind structure is. We'll talk about blind structures more in a bit. When the field is narrowing and you're approaching payouts, THATS when you need to make a move. Don't get weird and nervous about finishing in the money. You need to focus on placing at the top. And in order to do that, you'll want to steal some pots while everyone's playing like a bunch of pansies. When everyone's tight, the obvious strategy is to play loose and make some semi-bluffs. This works especially well if you've developed a tight image at the table you're at. Of course, don't get too crazy. People aren't going to be folding pocket aces or anything. The key is to just look for weakness and bet aggressively. Most players will fold and try to wait it out until the payouts begin. Late stage strategies. Once the payouts begin, watch out. This is when you should tighten up because everyone starts going crazy. It's like a release of all this pent-up energy and tension from the previous stage. You'll see an unusual amount of loose and aggressive action right when the payouts start, since a lot of guys are trying to build their stacks in order to make the final table. When you make it to the late stage of the tournament, that's when you're playing with the big boys. To win at this stage, you've got to be at the top of your game. Period. After the initial surge of loose play when the payouts begin, get into your groove. Adopt a level-headed strategy of tight aggressive play. Be conscious of the fact that you're up against good card players now, many of whom can quickly spot tells, calculate odds, and size up your betting patterns. The blinds will most likely be very high at this point, which means every hand is crucial. Be patient and choose your battles wisely. Look for opportunities when you sense weakness, have great positioning, and can go up against stacks that are shorter than yours. That way you can stay alive if you lose a big hand. All the little strategies, techniques, and tactics come together during the late stages of a big tournament. Keep your cool. Let's take a look at how the blind structure affects your tournament strategy. In my experience, this is what 99.9% of card players get wrong. They just don't understand how to effectively adapt to different blind structures. When the blinds go up quickly. For many large tournaments, the blinds go up quickly. This speeds up the tournament by forcing action. For example, here's what the blind structure looked like for a $1,500 buy-in World Series of Poker event this year. I finished 30th in this tournament, over 2,000 entrants. Each player started with $1,500 in chips, and each level lasted 60 minutes, except for the final table levels. Level Antes blinds 1SD $25, $25 2ND, $25 $50, 3RD $50 $100, 4TH $100 $200, 5TH $25 $100 $200, 6TH $50 $150 $300, 7TH $50 $200 $400, 8TH $75 $300. $600 remove $25, chips 9TH $100 $400 $800, 10TH $200, $600, $1200, $11TH $300, $800, $1600, $12TH $400, $1200, $2400, remove $100, chips 13TH $500, $1500, $3000, $14TH $500, $2000, $4000, 15TH $500, $2,500, $5,000, remove $500 chips, 16TH $1,000, $3,000, $6,000, 17TH, $1,000, $4,000, $8,000, 18TH, $2,000, $6,000, $12,000, 19TH, $2,000, $8,000, $16,000, 20TH $3,000, $10,000, $2,000, $21SD $4,000, $12,000, $2,400, remove $1,000 chips, 22ND $5,000, $15,000, $3,000, $23RD $5,000, $20,000, $4,000, $24TH $5,000, $25,000, $5,000. This is an example of a tournament where the blinds were moving quickly. At first glance, it may not seem that they moved up so quickly, but let's use an example to demonstrate. Let's say we're in the first hour of the tournament. I look down to see my cards. I like this hand. It has good straight and flush possibilities. And normally, in a cash game, I'd raise with this hidden hand to build pot size. Let's say in this example, I'm on the button, which is the best positioning, and four players from my 10-man table have limped in. What should I do? If I raise, which is a bad idea, I need to throw out 2-3 times the big blind, so, say I raise it $75. I get a couple callers and get to see the flop. The flop hits. Nice. I've just flopped an open-ended straight draw. And my opponents won't see it coming if I hit. My odds of hitting the 7 or queen by the end of this hand is 31.45%. My opponents check to me. What should I do? I made the preflop raise, so I want to come out betting. I'd like to win the pot now, but one of my opponents probably has the ace. There's $300 in the pot, so I should bet at least $200 or so. I throw out a $200 bet and get one caller. I put him on the ace. The turn hits and is no help to me. Now what? There's $700 in the pot and my opponent makes a bet. And I'm stuck in an awful spot. I've already invested a huge portion of my stack and have got myself pot committed. All I can do is try to bluff or fold and be short stacked already. That's the kind of trouble you'll get in playing hands like suited connectors or small pocket pairs. They're just not worth it. In this example, the blinds were at their minimum level, and in the real tournament, those levels seemed to go by fast. An hour felt like 10 minutes. The lesson to be learned is to play premium hands only. And the next lesson to be learned is play your positioning. Pocket pairs under 10s are worth playing when you have great positioning and can see a flop for cheap. The only other time I'd play these hands is when I was getting 4-1 or better on my money and felt like I had a hidden hand that might bust someone, and that would allow me to double up if I hit trips. When I played this $1,500 buy-in WSOP, I played about 2-3 hands per hour for the first 14 hours. I looked for opportunities to double up and win all-in matches. I hit trips once and doubled up. Pocket kings doubled me up another time, and so on. After about 10 levels, it came time to start stealing the blinds. The blinds were so high that they were practically monster pots. If I caught a good hand with good positioning, I'd sneak in to steal some blinds or initiate heads-up action. Getting good cards makes everything easier. During the times I wasn't getting good cards, I had to just throw out semi-bluffs and take risks when I got a read on my opponents. This simple balance of playing your positioning, the pot odds, and premium hands will get you very far in one of these tournaments. The biggest thing working to your disadvantage is if you get sucked out early with all your chips in the middle. This happens sometimes, and the solution is to just accept it and move on to the next tournament. Okay, so that's what you do when the blinds go up quickly. Let's talk about when the blinds go up slowly, when the blinds go up slowly. A great example of a tournament when the blinds go up slowly is the World Series of Poker main event, $10,000 buy-in. This type of blind structure allows you to play around more, and it's where all the different elements of No Limit Texas Hold'em come together. This is exactly why it's the tournament where the world champion of poker is decided. All right, so here's the blind structure for the 2005 WSOP main event. Each level lasted 2 hours, and each player started with $10,000 in chips. Level Antes blinds 1 SD $25, $50 2 ND $50, $100 3 RD $100, $200 4 TH $25 $100, $200 5 TH $50 $150, $300 6 TH $50 $200, $400 7 TH $50 $250, $500 8 TH $75 $300, $600 remove $25 chips 9 TH $100 $400, $800 10 TH $100 $500, $1,000 end of day 4 11 TH $200 $600, $1,200, 12 TH $200, $800. $1,600, 13 TH $300, $1,000. $2,000, 14 TH $400, $1,200. $2,400, remove $100, chips, 15 TH $500, $1,500. $3,000, 16 TH $500, $2,000. $4,000, 17 TH $500, $2,500. $5,000, remove $500, CHIPS 18 TH, $1,000, $3,000. $6,000 19th, $1,000 $4,000, $8,000 20th, $1,000 $5,000, $10,000 21st, $2,000 $6,000, $12,000 22nd, $2,000 $8,000, $16,000 23rd, $3,000 $10,000, $20,000 24th, $4,000 $12,000, $24,000 remove $1,000 chips, $25th, $5,000 $15,000, $30,000 26th, $5,000 $20,000, $40,000 27th, $5,000 $25,000, $50,000 remove $5,000 chips, $28th, $10,000 $30,000, $60,000 29th, $10,000 $40,000, $80,000 30th, $10,000 $50,000, $100,000 31st, $20,000 $60,000, $120,000 32nd, $20,000 $80,000, $160,000 33rd, $30,000 $100,000, $200,000. With this type of blind structure, you can play hands like 10-9 suited in early positioning. Heck, you can even come in with a small raise. Losing a pot here or there isn't going to immediately make you the short stack, like it is with our previous blind structure. When blinds move slowly, that is when you want to throw out feeler bets, play hidden hands more aggressively, and mix up your style of play frequently. Keep your opponents on their toes. Set up a table image that will help you get action with the big hands. When the blinds moved quickly, getting action is no problem, because everyone is eager to push all in and win a huge pot. It's not the same with blinds moving slowly. There's no reason for your opponents to risk many chips on mediocre hands. That's why you have to show your aggressive side and maybe show a bluff here or there in order to set yourself up for when you get a monster. Of course, just as with any type of tournament you're in, you still want to focus on playing your positioning and adopting a tight aggressive style of play. You just don't need to be tight aggressive squared. Do your homework before entering a tournament. Figure out what the blind structure is and see if it matches your style of play. Personally, when the blinds move up slowly, I think the game is more fun, but so far, I've had more success with tournaments where the blinds went up quickly. I think it's because most players aren't used to the ladder and just don't know how to adjust. The key is to go into the tournament with a clear plan in mind, knowing these types of differences and being ready for them. You'll immediately have a huge edge over the competition. Now let's look at some strategies for beating certain types of players, beating tournament tightwads. Beating tournament tightwads is much easier than you'd think. A lot of players get frustrated when they run into tight players because they can never seem to get any action. There are three main steps to follow in order to overcome this type of player. Step 1, get a read. Understand the psyche of a tight player. If you go all in and they don't have a great hand, they will fold. They'll only play premium hands. The key is to use these facts to your advantage rather than letting them frustrate you. Step 2, bully them. Since tight players fold a lot, it's your job to be the bully. If you get a chance to pick on them, make frequent raises. Steal pots from them over and over and over again. Raise them while they're in the big blind. Don't play your cards, play them. If they make a move, get out. They probably have a hand. Then resume your bullying. After a while, they'll get frustrated with you. They'll either stick to their game plan and slowly get short stacked because they're just losing their blinds over and over, or they'll change their style of play and get more aggressive. If they get more aggressive, that's exactly what you want. Because then when you catch a real hand, you'll get action and you can put them away. If they remain tight, keep bullying. And show a bluff or two. Make them think you're a manic or extremely loose. Step 3, beat them when you've got it. The final step is to sucker them in when you've got a real hand. If they're sick of your antics and decide to give you action, you can push them all in, as if you were bluffing again, when you've got a monster. If they're not going to give you a lot of action, but they think you're bluffing, you can sucker them in by making mid-sized bets. You want them to come over the top of you and become pot committed. The most common thing that happens is that tournament tighties get off to a chip lead early, since their tight play is the best style early in a tournament. Later, however, they need to loosen up. If they don't, they won't get much action with their good hands and their chip stacks will slowly dwindle. Have fun playing against tight players. They're easy to beat. If they move aggressively, get out. If they don't move aggressively, be the aggressor. It's really that simple, and since they won't have a good hand very often, you'll win far more pots. Beating loose aggressive players. Manics are much harder to go up against in ring games than they are in tournaments. In tournaments, they're actually your best friends. The reason is because they're the ones who will give you action when you catch a monster hand. Manics are the players who build your chip stack. If you're up against a manic who's playing lots of starting hands and bullying the table, don't worry. Just sit back and be patient. If you can come back over the top of them once in a while and take a stand, that's a good strategy. If you just can't catch any cards, just be cool. Wait, and then make your move when you can. Manics feed on players who check and call. So when you do have a monster hand, check call them down to the turn or river and then make a move. Get them pot committed before letting them know you really do have a great hand. This will piss them off to no end and you'll usually get action. I've discovered that manics are more susceptible to feeling pot committed than other players. Also, if a manic has a good hand and you raise him, he won't hesitate to go right back over the top of you or put you all in. Ideally, you'll find a situation where he has a good hand but you've got the nuts or close to it. Just double his bets and get in his face a bit. He'll be the aggressive one and usually push you all in. Then you take him out. Are rebuys, as you know, a lot of tournaments allow rebuys. This adds an interesting dynamic to the tournament and, of course, changes your game strategy. Only enter a rebuy tournament if you have the money. If you decide to play in a rebuy tournament, do it the right way. You need at least one or two rebuys in your pocket. If not, move down to a lower stakes. The fact that other players are willing to rebuy, but you're not, puts you at a huge disadvantage. Period. Don't get crazy in the beginning. The ability to rebuy into a tournament means that being aggressive early is an obvious strategy. I mean, you want to build an early chip lead, and you'll get action with just about every hand. I've seen rebuy tournaments where the amount of action is just silly, like five-way all-ins before the flop. Even if you have rockets, there's a good chance you'll lose in that circumstance. And that's why you should never play in one of these tournaments if you don't have the cash. Even though you want to play a little bit more aggressively, you don't want to play much looser in the beginning. In fact, you should maybe consider playing TIGHTER with starting hand selection. Here, SY, first off, you're going to get action with your monster hands, so you don't need to worry much about setting up a loose table image or anything like that. Secondly, often when you rebuy, you can't buy in for the original amount. And even if you can, the chips you originally bought in for are now distributed in your opponent's stacks. Having to rebuy multiple times isn't much fun, since you're relatively short stacked right away and you just wasted money. I prefer to be level-headed about it. I stick with my tight aggressive style, but play more aggressively when I've got a great hand. When rebuys end, a new game begins. Normally, in a tournament, you want to pay close attention to betting patterns from the very beginning. But when rebuys are possible, betting patterns are irrelevant. Everything depends on what the player's mentality is about rebuying. When the rebuys are over, THATS, when the real poker begins. Don't take any information you gathered in the beginning stages too seriously. Satellites, the last type of tournament I want to discuss, is satellites. The players are worse. Generally, the players in satellites aren't that good. If they were really good, they'd have a bankroll. Be prepared for a more amateur feel to the tournament. That's not to say great players don't enter satellites, but the majority of satellite players aren't pro level. You can beat them fairly easily. The play is looser. Since satellites are basically feeders into higher stakes games, the play is usually looser. This is simply because there's not as much money at stake. Your strategy should be the same as what we talked about in sit and go, S, and multi-table tournaments where the blinds go up quickly, tight aggressive squared. Play only premium hands. The key is survival. When you get a monster, push aggressively. This is such a simple formula, but it works like gangbusters. When the field narrows, play your positioning wisely and steal some blinds. Blind stealing is very important, and it's achieved with aggressive play when you sense weakness and have good positioning. Make sure the satellite is worth it. Many satellites are like free-rolls. They're just not worth your time. The prize isn't always worth the time and energy required to win. You might be better off grinding it out in cash games in order to build your bankroll, or maybe play some high-stakes sit-and-go S. That's not to say all satellites aren't worth it. The key is to investigate. Is the prize based on the number of entrants? Is there a limit on the number of entrants? For instance, Harrah's had a satellite before the WSOP main event. It was a $200 buy-in limited to 100 people. The top 10 were paid out. Overall, it was what I'd consider a satellite worth entering, because making the final table meant making a decent amount of cash. Ultimately, the choice is yours. And what I've found is the best strategy is to try something, learn from it, and apply your new knowledge into your next decision. This is how you figure out what tournaments you're most suited for, what stakes you're most suited for, and exactly how to build a giant bankroll. Now let's take a look at how to get started building that bankroll, taking your skills to the next level. I sincerely hope you got a lot of value from this special tournament tactics report. Now it's time to take your skills to the next level. First off, I want to tell you about a new course I'm working on. It's all about online poker. So far, I've written over 500 pages. Yes, that's right, 500. And it's not done. I sincerely believe this is going to become the Bible of online poker. I'm forced to split it up into three binders full of information, and that's not counting the CDs and bonuses I'm including. More important than the quantity of pages is the quality of this new program. It is jam-packed with amazing strategies and secrets about online poker that have never been published before. I've been working on it for almost a year, and I've compiled so much data about playing styles, stakes, finding the fish, maximizing profits, using special software, calculating odds, you know, I can't even do this program justice by describing it like this. You'll just have to wait and see. The title of this new program is going to be Online Poker Money Machine. Now here's the deal, like I said, I'm not done writing, tweaking, adding, and editing. But when I am done, I want you to be the first to know about it. That's why I've set up a special interest list. Page on this page, you'll be asked to type in your first name and email. This will give you priority access to the program when it's released. You'll be the first to know. So if you're interested in this course and want to know about it when I'm done, go sign up for the interest list right now. There's absolutely no commitment involved. This just tells me to notify you first. Here, S the link. Link, I'll talk to you again soon. Your friend, Roy Rounder the End.